to begin today by saying hello. Some of you I have met before, mostly those of you who serve on the session of the congregation, and of course I've gotten to know the staff of your church over the last few months. But my name is Shannon Vance Ocampo. I serve as the general presbyter for your presbytery, the Presbytery of Southern New England. We span three states, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and the majority of the state of Massachusetts, excluding the very northern part of Massachusetts and the city of Boston and its suburbs. So geographically, the presbytery is quite large, and we have just under 30 congregations that span throughout the presbytery. So it's really great to be here and to be with you today. It has been a joy and an honor to be working with your session, who is incredibly capable, and also closely with your staff, especially with Kibby and with Victoria. So it's great to be here today, and thank you all so much for welcoming me. I was, for some reason, it reminded me as Kibby was doing the children's sermon with the kids that we just acquired a fish at our house. My husband came home. I came home a few nights ago, and you know, I was late coming in, and I went to bed, and in the morning I got up, and I realized we had a fish sitting in front of the kitchen sink. We had a betta, and I thought to myself, where did this fish come from? And my husband had picked it up at the Y. He had gone, and they were doing something with betta fish, and this one was the last one left, and he brought it home. So we have a new fish. His name is Fluffy, and he is bright red. He's named after the big dog in Harry Potter. So. But he is much smaller than that dog was, of course, in Harry Potter. So it's great to be here. Let us pray. Lord our God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of each of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So the Scottish hymn writer, one of the Scottish hymn writers from the Iona community, his name is John Bell. He wrote a beautiful hymn in the late 1980s, and it's titled The Summons. And if I had thought ahead enough, I would have given it to Victoria for us to sing this morning. It's not in the blue hymnal, but there's actually a supplemental blue hymnal that came out about 10 years after the blue hymnal was published, and it's in the supplemental version. And so maybe you'll look it up and sing it sometime. It's a great hymn. But I'd like to just share with you one verse from that hymn as we begin. The words are, "Will you come and follow me if I but call your name? Will you go where you don't know and never be the same? Will you let my love be shown? Will you let my name be known? Will you let my life be grown in you and you in me?" There's many other verses to that hymn. But I love it. I always used to use that hymn when I served in parish ministry on Confirmation Sunday. We would sing it as the last hymn because it's about calling and about discipleship. And on Confirmation Sunday, of course, the youth of the church are making commitments. But I always think of that hymn when I think of this passage from Mark's Gospel, the call of Jesus to the four first disciples. "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." And Simon, Andrew, James, and John are described by the writer of the gospel as immediately leaving their nets to follow Jesus. So the question we must start with this morning is this one: are we ready to follow Jesus? Are we ready to immediately follow Jesus? Are we willing to let go of so much in our lives and communities that puts up barriers between us and the divine? And let it all go so that we can be the disciples that we are called to be. Can we do this? Before we jump to starting to answer the question for ourselves, I'd like to imagine 2,000 years ago what that first call of Jesus to those four fishermen, what it really entailed. Now, Simon and Andrew, James and John, they were all fishermen on the Sea of Galilee, and as the writer of the Gospel of Mark makes a very important point. They were casting their nets, and they were also mending their nets. Mark's Gospel is the shortest Gospel. It's also considered to be the earliest Gospel in terms of its writing. So I always say to people about the four Gospels, we think about the game of telephone, and as you say something and it goes along the line, eventually by the time you get to the end, it might have some distortions. So the earlier you are, the better off things are. And so Mark is considered the earliest in terms of its writing. The writer of Mark's gospel is also known for being incredibly skilled in terms of writing and literary imagination, and also around precision in writing, and many double meanings in the words and the sentences used throughout the gospel. So that word immediately, for example, is a favorite word of the writer of Mark's gospel. It's used repetitively over and over again in the gospel, and it's thought to convey the nonstop, never-ending movement that Jesus had in his ministry and the urgency of Jesus' message and ministry, and to convey that urgency of purpose and discipleship to the reader. So the disciples, those first four disciples, did not think about the call that was issued to them. They followed Jesus immediately. They responded to God's call immediately. They lived into the beckoning of the Spirit immediately. Also in verse 16, Mark says what the disciples left behind, their nets. They were casting their nets into the sea. They were mending their nets. That's not just a descriptor of what was going on when Jesus showed up and found them along the side of the sea. That is information that directly explains what the disciples were giving up, their nets. Now, when I read over this passage, many times I've glossed over the nets. I just think to myself, well, they were fishermen. They had nets. But fishing nets are not just anything in the time of Jesus. Nets were carefully constructed tools of a few different types. They required extensive cleaning in between uses, and they were intricate in their design and construction, and of course, they were all made from hand. Fishermen had to know not just how to catch a fish or where the fish were. They needed to know how to make the nets. Small rocks had holes drilled through them, making them into large beads, and they were attached to the bottoms of the nets for weighting them at the bottom so that they could run along the sea floor. Similarly, cork was harvested, and it was used at the top of the nets to help with flotation along the top of the sea. There were nets that were cast between boats to trawl for fish, and circular nets that were expertly thrown from land to catch fish. Specific nets were used during the day, and other nets were used at night. The fishing industry on the Sea of Galilee was a robust economic engine in the time of Jesus. And so fishermen, like the family that Jesus came from, were not the most destitute families in their communities. They were still pretty destitute, but they were not the most destitute. They were not rich or well-off either, but they had a measure of economic stability. They were the trade class, families that relied on skilled labor, but they were also families who hired workers, as is described in verse 20 of this passage. Mark leaves in another key detail, that James and John left their father behind with their nets, a significant act of devotion to Jesus because families depended on generational continuity for the learning of skills, for consistent labor, and for the procreation of the next generation. With the two brothers, the two men of the family of Zebedee leaving, they not only left their father behind to work alone and now do the work of three people, but they took away those other generational ways of building and maintaining economic stability. Not only that, in a culture and society where family relationships and obligations were strong and the glue that held communities together, they had walked away from expectations, love, and deep, deep relationship. Letting go of nets and families, things that quite literally knit you together in all sorts of ways, economic, familial, professional. These were no small acts of devotion on that day. Those first four disciples walked away from a lot, not to mention they had no idea what they were getting themselves into, and that at the end of Mark's gospel, their leader would end up hanging and dying on a cross. They were headed into an entirely new line of work. They were walking into an unknown future with no promise of steady pay and no way to bring their families along. These details that seem so little when we first read the passage are not little at all. Mark puts them here to talk about what following Jesus really means, how steep the climb to authentic discipleship actually is, and how real the costs are. Mark is telling us in all sorts of ways that Jesus is not inviting the first disciples into a task, follow me and I will make you fish for people, but instead a new identity, follow me and I will make you become fishers of people. Mark is reminding us of something that must be at the core of who we are, that discipleship is a process of identity in Jesus Christ. It's not a task to be fulfilled, a box to be checked off, a strategic plan to be constructed, a budget to be balanced, or a building to be made perfect. But instead, for a life to be crafted in individual and communal ways and knit together between these two pieces so that it conforms in deep and abiding ways to the way of Jesus Christ, which is the way of peace, of justice, of nonviolence, of radical equality, of the overturning of socially constructed norms, of overturning the existing order of power and privilege. Identity in the way of Jesus Christ is the leaving of nets, which symbolizes safety and security, social constructions that order our lives, and which have great power over us in order to engage in alternative social practice. And then to be knit together in a way that we might net up with a new community. And most importantly, to be knit back together with and by the Spirit. Walking away from so many things to follow Jesus, walking into so many things to gain a new life. I'd like to take us to the quote at the front of the bulletin by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the holiday of which to honor him we celebrated just under a week ago. And this year in April, we will honor and observe the 50th anniversary of his assassination and murder. Dr. King writes these words, and these are some of the words he writes from a Birmingham city jail. The judgment of God is upon the church as ever before. If today's church does not recapture the sacrificial spirit of the early church, it will lose its authenticity, forfeit the loyalty of millions, and be dismissed as an irrelevant social club with no meaning for the 20th century. We are now in the 21st century. I think about Dr. King a lot when I think about how am I measuring my life as a disciple of Jesus Christ. I often think to myself about all of the sermons that Dr. King preached, all of the things that he said, all of the places that he marched to, all of the jail cells that he sat in, the threats he endured, all that he gave up from his family to friendships, personal security, security of his family, even of his little children, who sometimes were inside the house when it was attacked and even bombed. Most especially, he gave up people's goodwill. At the time of his death, Dr. King's approval rating hovered just over 30%, 31, 32% approval rating. That's a very low approval rating. We think of Dr. King today as such a prophet, but we must remember that he challenged things at the core identity of the culture he lived in and that we still live in. And he talked about what had to be let go of if faithfulness to the way of Jesus Christ was really priority number one. The time of his death, Dr. King was not well liked. He was being followed by the FBI, and he was not revered in the way that he is today. Dr. King was unflinching in his commitment to follow Jesus. He condemned the war machine of the Vietnam War. He wanted to recenter the voices of the poor. He fought tirelessly for voting rights, desegregation, and the basic respect of all people. None of these were popular opinions then, and they are not popular opinions even today. But they are faithful to the way of Jesus Christ because at their core, these acts are all about the restoration of human dignity and the work to realign community here with the life that the disciples signed on to when they left their nets to follow Jesus. So as we sit here in worship 50 years later, the Voting Rights Act has been carefully picked apart and destroyed by those in power in our country who continue to want to govern and hold on to power through gerrymandering, race baiting, the politics of fear. 1 in 8 people in our country live in poverty. Half of those live in what is termed by the United Nations extreme poverty. And the United Nations did a full study on poverty in the United States just this past fall, studies that used to happen in other places of the world. The war machine is never ending. Nearly 50% of the budget of our country is spent on war and militarism, things that stand in direct opposition to the way of Jesus, which was adherence to nonviolence and deep resistance to the militarism of power and control of his time. Racial segregation of communities, schools, access to safe policing, and so many other things have worsened, not gotten better, in the last 50 years. Dr. King's message of devotion to the way of Jesus Christ, letting go of the nets of family, security, popularity, prestige, and even country, are needed now more than ever. So if we let go of our nets to follow Jesus, what do we have to walk away from? What do we have to denounce and what do we have to pick up? Jesus' call heard in Mark's gospel today is not an easy call. If we are honest, it is one that is absolutely terrifying because it means letting go of so much. And if we let go of those things as acts of faith, the truth is many people will walk away from you and they will walk away from me. So I sit here today in worship, and as you sit here today in worship, we have to say to ourselves, we are not fishermen. So we have a lot more to let go of, don't we? I know as I read the Bible, the call to devotion to Jesus is a call to immediate action. I know that as a scholar of the Bible. But I also know as a pastor and as a human being that this is not something that can be so easily executed. There are moments when we all take immediate action, but more often than not, there are times when we sit on the sidelines. We are all held captive to things of this world. But if we are to be faithful, then this is a captivity we must work on every day. These things that chip away at faithfulness to Jesus. Coming into a new identity is one of the hardest spiritual paths to take. Let me close today by talking about a stage of letting go and picking up new identities that this congregation is beginning. Knowing that this is a painful theme right now in the life of your congregation, your first Sunday without Paul as your pastor, and me, a stranger, here to preach this morning. I, too, have left congregations in my ministry to take on new calls, and I have deeply mourned those passages of time. Believing and letting go is not easy on either side of the relationship between a pastor and a congregation. And so this is a tender time. And you and I are just getting to know each other. but know these things about me, that as the person who leads this presbytery, which this congregation is a part of, that I will love you. I will fight for you. As your session knows, I will also push you, and I will care for you. You are not alone. This interim time that your congregation is entering to is all about discipleship, and it is all about identity in Jesus. It is about loving, faithful examination of who you are, who you have been, and who you can become. It's about fine-tuning your life in community with each other so that your outward living can be as reflexive and close as possible to the way of Jesus. Transformation, new life, and a new beginning is never about tasks. It is always about identity. And this is internal, spiritual work. It can be hard and challenging, but it is the season that you are called to in this time, and the reality is it is the season that we are always called to. But for an interim time in a congregation, that season is with greater intentionality, greater focus, and in the end will reveal greater clarity about being the Church of Jesus Christ, devoted, attentive, and sacrificial in its discipleship. So I leave you today with this short passage from Mark's Gospel that's short, but it's also very deep. And I hope that it will be a guiding light for you in this interim time. What is precious that might need to be let go of? What needs to be walked away from? But most importantly, what needs to be picked up? Today's passage is not about tasks and metrics, growth and success. It's about the most basic piece of our life, identity, core identity in Jesus Christ. Will you come and follow me if I but call your name? Will you go where you don't know and never be the same? Will you let my love be shown? Will you let my name be known? Will you let my life be grown in you and you in me? Follow Jesus. Embrace identity, not tasks. Follow Jesus, take the risks. Follow Jesus, who gives us the courage to let go of the nets. Good news for you and for me. Amen.